We're in Joshua chapter number 3, taking up our story at verse number 7, where God is speaking to Joshua on the 10th day of the first Jewish month of the 41st year of the Exodus, a date that I assign as 18 April 1416 BC. They are going to cross the Jordan today. Now, the normal way that you would cross the Jordan is you'd have to wade across it. There's no bridge here. These are called the fords of the Jordan because there's kind of a shallowy bridge under the water that goes across here. Although at this particular time of the year, there's a lot more water here than usual. The Jordan floods during the early spring. The winter is over. The rains, the last rains are happening just before this. And so all of that melt off of Mount Hermon, way up in the north, and all of that water that has been running off all the hills of the Galilees and all up and down the Jordan Valley, all of that water has drained into the Jordan River, and it has pushed it well beyond its normal banks. It's flooded on both sides. And you can kind of see the ancient floodplain on satellite maps like Google Earth, for example, where you can tell just how far the floodwaters must have gone over a long period of time and shaped the geography. Now, the Jordan today is a pitiful shadow of what it would have been in Joshua's day. I've been there to the Jordan where the crossing point must be close to. And it's a little bitty muddy river that you can easily throw a rock across, and you can actually wade across it. In fact, the place that we stopped is where the people on, certain people on both sides, Israel and Jordan, come to do Christian baptisms, because this is the traditional site of where Jesus was baptized. They have to have Israeli border guards watching right here, because it's a border that can be walked across very easily. And so it's nothing compared to what it must have been like in Joshua's time. There's reasons for that. One of the big reasons is because so many more people live today in the Middle East than did back in this time. Only about 10% of all of the water that comes from the watershed of the Jordan makes it all the way down to the Dead Sea, because so much of it is caught now and utilized by the population. There's also flood control situations up and down the Jordan River as well. You should picture, I think, for our purposes, the Jordan River on this particular day in Joshua chapter 3 being as much as a mile cross. And at its deepest point, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 feet maybe, where its normal bed was located, had been completely overwhelmed by all this excess water. And so, this needs a miracle. And God provides. Verse 7. He who is said to Joshua, "Today I will begin to exalt you in the sight of all Israel, that they may know that as I was with Moses, so I will be with you." So one of the big events that happened during the early Exodus was the crossing of the Red Sea. The Israelites walked across on dry ground. It's going to happen again. Verse 8, as for you, command the priests who bear the Ark of the Covenant, and there's going to be 12 of them carrying the Ark of the Covenant. When you come to the brink of the waters of the Jordan, you shall stand still in the Jordan. That'll be more carefully spelled out in a little bit. That basically, they'll walk into the water, and as the water recedes in front of them, they will eventually get to the center of the normal bed for the Jordan River. And that's where they're going to stop and stand until this event is over with. Now, that's not being made clear yet to anybody other than Joshua. So Joshua said to the people of Israel, come here, listen to the words of He who is your God. Joshua then said, here is how you shall know that the living God is among you, and that He will without fail drive out from before you the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Hivites, the Perizzites, the Girgizzites, the Amorites, the Jebusites, the seven different people groups that made up the Canaanites within the Promised Land. Behold, the Ark of the Covenant of He who is of all the earth is passing over before you into the Jordan. So God's throne is going to guide you down through the water. Now, they've already been told you have to stay 1,000 cubits or 2,000 cubits away from it, which is roughly a little over 3,000 feet. Now, therefore, take 12 men from the tribes of Israel, from each tribe a man. So this would be from the 12 tribes, not inclusive of the Levite tribe. The Levite tribe is represented in this story by the priests who are carrying the Ark of the Covenant. And then he tells them what they're going to see. This is what God told him, and now he's passing it on. When the soles of the feet of the priests bearing the Ark of He who is, the Lord or Master of all the earth, shall rest in the waters of the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan shall be cut off from flowing, and the waters coming down from above shall stand up in one heap. Now, this is going to be miraculous timing that only God could pull off. The place where the waters are going to be cut off is many tens of miles north of this crossing site. This crossing site is within just a few miles north of the Dead Sea. And the place where it gets cut off is not terribly far south of the Sea of Galilee. And there's about 60 miles, I think, of river between the two places, because the river zigs and zags all over the place. God will turn off the water way up north at exactly the right time that when later these priests step into the water, it will start receding from them because the tap has been turned off, because it's all now draining out in front of them into the Dead Sea. And the rest of the water is being barricaded by God way up north. Water had to have been turned off way up north a couple of hours earlier in order for this miracle to happen at this moment. I just want you to understand how amazing the timing of God is. There's probably also some wind-blowing action, some drying action that takes place here, to take care of the mud issue. All of us who, you know, have grown up around water, creeks or ponds or lakes, we know that if you drain the water off of some place that's always had water on it, the mud is nasty underneath there, and you can sink down into it pretty easily. So it has to be dried out quickly. So I'm guessing God is doing some air drying as these priests move forward into the riverbed. Verse 14. So when the people set out from their tents to pass over the Jordan with the priests bearing the Ark of the Covenant before the people, as soon as those bearing the Ark had come as far as the Jordan, now remember the Jordan is in flood stage, so it's probably at least a mile across at this time. As soon as their feet were dipped in the brink of the water, and then comes the note that I've already mentioned, now the Jordan overflows all its banks throughout the time of the harvest. Now the harvest that's being referenced here is the barley harvest, which is the first grain harvest of the spring. So usually March and April, or late March and then the beginning of April is when this starts. So the waters coming down from above, meaning from the north, stood and rose up in a heap very far away at Adam. So we don't know where that's at specifically. The city that is beside Zaretan. Now Zaretan does get mentioned in other places, such as 1 Kings 4. Let me read it to you, verse 12. Baana, the son of Ahilud, in Tanakh, and Megiddo, and then all Bethshan. We know where Bethshan is. It's just south of the south end of the Dead Sea, which is beside Zaretan below Jezreel. So that's why we know exactly how far north this backup of the water took place. The water seems to be backing up into the lower Jezreel Valley. And so as far as Adam, the city that is beside Zaretan, and those flowing down toward the Sea of the Arabah, the Salt Sea, we call it the Dead Sea now, were completely cut off. So God stopped the water way up north, and all that water drained out of the lower Jordan until the draining point arrived at the crossing site at the exact moment that the priest stepped into the water. And then God, as they continue walking out into the bed of the River Jordan, God dries that all out. And so it's nothing but just a little valley now. Verse number 17, actually beginning at the end of 18. The people passed over opposite Jericho. Now the priests bearing the Ark of the Covenant of He Who Is stood firmly on dry ground in the midst of the Jordan, and all Israel was passing over on dry ground until all the nation finished passing over the Jordan. So they come across in massive numbers for a couple of hours at least until they are past the floodplain and up and on the other side. It's about a little shy of 7 miles, I think, from the Jordan River up to the actual site of ancient Jericho. The tradition of the Jewish people, which is represented in the writings of Josephus of the first century AD, is that the Israelis will set up their encampment in the Promised Land just a little over a mile to the east of the city of Jericho. So they're going to have to come about 5 miles or so, a little over 5 miles from the crossing point up to their first encampment in the Promised Land, which they'll give a name to in a little bit. And guess who's watching all of this? The spotters, the people on watch, the watchmen at Jericho. But once the word went out that cloud that glowing cloud was coming down to the Jordan, probably a lot more people were watching from the walls of Jericho. And what did they see? They saw the floodwaters drain and the bed of the Jordan become dry. And they saw the people come across in mass and start setting up their tents within about a mile and a quarter or so of their wall. That's what they saw. And then, just to finish the story of what else they saw, they would have seen that glory cloud, which eventually they'd start seeing that it's emanating from a big golden throne that's being carried by 12 priests. That will come and take position in the center of this brand new Israeli encampment, a little over a mile from their place. And that's where the glory of God is going to be hanging near them for the next week or so. This has got to be another one of those things that terrifies the people living in Jericho. Chapter 4. When all the nation, all the people of Israel, had finished passing over the Jordan, he who is said to Joshua, take 12 men from the people, from each tribe a man. Now, he'd already said that they wanted to do this. And command them, saying, take 12 stones from here, out of the midst of the Jordan, from the very place where the priest's feet stood firmly. So, I need you guys to get in here and select 12 stones from near the feet of the 12 priests carrying the ark. And what are they going to do with them? Bring them over with you and lay them down in the place where you will lodge tonight. So you're going to bring them across and put them in the encampment. I don't know exactly where. I would suggest it may have been near the front gate of the tabernacle, which would be on the east side of the encampment, near the Judah tribe's encampment as well. But you're going to make a monument about this crossing. So verse 4, then Joshua called the 12 men from the people of Israel whom he had appointed, a man from each tribe, and Joshua said to them, pass on before the ark of he who is your God into the midst of the Jordan. Take up each of you a stone upon his shoulder, according to the number of the tribes of the people of Israel, that this may be a sign among you. When your children ask in time to come, what do these stones mean to you? What's this monument of 12 stones about? Then you shall tell them that the waters of the Jordan were cut off before the ark of the covenant of he who is, when it passed over the Jordan. The waters of the Jordan were cut off. So these stones shall be to the people of Israel a memorial forever. It will be a memorial ongoing. And so this will become the Gilgal memorial to the crossing of the Jordan. So the people did just as Joshua commanded. They took up 12 stones out of the midst of the Jordan, according to the number of the tribes of the people of Israel, just as he who is told Joshua. They carried them over with them to the place where they lodged, and they laid them down there. And Joshua set up 12 stones in the midst of the Jordan, in the place where the feet of the priests bearing the Ark of the Covenant had stood, and they are there to this day. Now that's interesting. He does a reciprocal memorial inside the bed of the Jordan. He probably has the same guys grab stones from the new encampment and take them back down and put them into some sort of pile, some sort of arrangement, so that whenever the waters go back, they'll be there. Now, every once in a while, when it's dry, especially in the high summer, it's possible that the top of that pile of stones could have been seen by Israelis wading across at that same point. And that would be the reason why that pillar was set up as well. Monuments are very important to keeping history moving from generation to generation. The idea that it's still there to this day tells us that whoever's writing the book of Joshua, and I don't think it's Joshua because his death is mentioned at the end of the book. I think it's likely that it would be somebody like Phinehas, who will be the next priest after his father Eleazar has passed away. I think he's a good candidate for the author of the book of Joshua. So definitely all of these monuments were still very much visible at the time that the writing of this book happened. Verse 10, for the priests bearing the ark stood in the midst of the Jordan until everything was finished, that he who has commanded Joshua to tell the people, according to all that Moses had commanded Joshua. And the people passed over in haste, so they were not dilly-dallying. They were not dragging their sandals. They were moving to get to the other side. And isn't this amazing for the one top-tier generation that crossed through the waters of the Red Sea as kids, and now they crossed through the waters of the Jordan as the leading adults in this story. What an amazing thing to have both of those as being part of your lifetime. Verse number 11, when all the people had finished passing over, the ark of he who is and the priest passed over before the people, and the sons of Reuben, the sons of Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh passed over armed before the people of Israel, as Moses told them. About 40,000 ready for war passed over before he who is for battle to the plains of Jericho. Remember that the two tribes and half of the Manasseh tribe had made an oath that they would be the vanguard. They would be the point of the spear during the next military operation of taking over the Canaanite or promised land. And so they're over here as well. Now, verse 14, on that day, he who is exalted Joshua in the sight of all Israel, they stood in awe of him, just as they had stood in awe of Moses all the days of his life. So that really cinched it for Joshua. This guarantees that people will take Joshua seriously for the rest of his life. Now, traditionally, he only lives about 25 years as the first judge of Israel in the Promised Land. But they respect him during that time because of this demonstration of God's power. Verse 15, he who is said to Joshua, command the priest bearing the Ark of the Testimony to come up out of the Jordan. So Joshua commanded the priest, come up out of the Jordan. And when the priest bearing the Ark of the Covenant came up from the midst of the Jordan, and the soles of the priest's feet were lifted up on dry ground, and I think what we mean by that is when they came up past the point of the floodplain, the waters of the Jordan returned to their place and overflowed all its banks as before. So the timing is now perfectly done in reverse. God lets all of that piled up water. Can you imagine what it must have been like for the Canaanites up there in the north who knew nothing as to why suddenly the water is backing up into the Jezreel Valley and flooding everything up there? Or maybe some of the Canaanites along the Jordan River Valley seeing it just suddenly dry up during flood season. How shocking that must have been, and frightening it must have been to them. But the timing is perfect that God releases the water so that a couple of hours later, it returns to the flood state at the crossing site right behind the priests walking up out of that area onto the dry ground. Perfect timing, miraculous timing. Now we come to the part that reminds us of the dating. The people came up out of the Jordan on the 10th day of the first month. Now that's the day on which they are supposed to select their Passover lambs. They encamped at Gilgal. It doesn't have that name yet. It'll get it. On the east border of Jericho, according to the tradition of the Jewish people, we're talking about a little over a mile, maybe a mile and a tenth to the east side. Those 12 stones, which they took out of Jordan, Joshua set up at Gilgal. And he said to the people of Israel, when your children ask their fathers in times to come, what do these stones mean? Then you shall tell, let your children know, Israel passed over this Jordan on dry ground. For he who is your God dried up the waters of the Jordan for you until you passed over, as he who is your God did to the Red Sea, which he dried up for us until we passed over. So that's the kids from the first miraculous crossing talking to great-grandkids that maybe didn't see this second miraculous crossing. So that all the peoples of the earth may know that the hand of he who is mighty, that you may fear he who is your God forever. So one of the big purposes of miracles like this, this demonstration of God's power, is so that you will fear the Lord, have respect, a healthy understanding of who he is as the Creator God. And you remember what the proverb says about that. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge and of wisdom. Mark your place. We'll get back here next time we get into the Word.